This series is brought to you with the kind support of Wellington Management, one of the world's largest independent asset managers. Wellington believes in the importance of a diverse workforce, equitable opportunities for all colleagues to reach their potential, and an inclusive culture.
I use three words. Every presentation I give, I use three words. And those three words are believe to achieve. Believe in your ability and your destiny in order to achieve success and happiness. And I will always speak up for the rights of the LGBT and diverse communities that live in modern society.
Ethan Devitt, and welcome to the 50 Faces podcast Pride Special, in which we are celebrating the career journeys of LGBTQ plus professionals. I'm joined today by Joanne Monk, OBE, who is Director of Global Education and Equality, Diversity and Inclusion at the Believe Foundation. She's an advocate for transgender awareness as well as domestic abuse, and last year was awarded an OBE for services to transgender equality in the 2021 New Year Honours List. Welcome, Joanne. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ethan.
Many congratulations. Absolutely wonderful honour and very well deserved.
It's a very high honour as well. And I think I'm only one of two people in the whole of the UK to get that high an honour for services to transgender equality. So it's incredible. And it's good that the government here in the UK are actually recognising this sort of diversity.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to get into a lot of that detail now and all the work you're doing. But let's start first with your journey.
So David, which is my previous name, was born in 1955. At the time of his birth, an imaginary tree was planted, and over the years that tree would grow, and its trunk and its branches would shape David's personality, his strengths, his characteristics. But the roots of that tree were never his. They belonged to Joanne. And over the years, she would flood him with her thoughts, her desires, and her emotions until he released her from the prison that she felt trapped in. You see, the seed of Joanne was planted in David's body before he was born, and it would take 58 years for it to germinate. David knew there was something different about him at the age of probably about 5 or 6. His mother had a dressing up box of her old clothes, which he used to put on and just wish he'd been born a girl. But I suppose he couldn't talk to anybody about it. The word transgender wasn't in the dictionary. There was very little comprehension of basically what it meant to be transgender. And he could never talk to his parents about it. So they were very difficult times. In the early years at school, primary school, he was fine. All his friends were girls. He didn't like doing the things that other boys did. Grammar school, he was bullied constantly because I think people perceived him to be different, although he still didn't really understand what was going on with his life. He left school with hardly any qualifications, went to work on a farm. The age of 19, he was buying his own clothes then on the pretense of probably buying them for a girlfriend, but he was really buying them for himself. And he used to fight this. See this, the fact that Joanne was inside him, she was an enemy so strong. He used to try and combat this enemy by burning the clothes that he bought, thinking that everything would go back to normality and he could live his life as a male. But of course, that didn't happen because Joanne just grew stronger and stronger. So life goes on, still working on the farm. He then had a nervous breakdown because he was really struggling with his identity. He knew by then that he should have been born a girl. But even in the sort of early 1980s, there was still little understanding really of what it meant to be transgender, and the support wasn't there. And he couldn't talk to his parents because they'd have probably just, I don't know, I beg you to think what they'd have said. He had girlfriends. He had girlfriends, I suppose, because he wanted to be like them rather than be with them. And there were difficult times. He met a girl and he got married because that's what was expected of him. That's what his parents would have wanted. And that's what men did. They got married. They had children. And he knew that his parents would have wanted grandchildren. But the first marriage ended when his wife caught him dressing and put a knife to him. Didn't hurt him, but basically the marriage ended on the spot. And he moved on. He met somebody else, got married again. But this time they had twin boys. And his wife didn't know about his private life because he was keeping everything really secret. He always felt he was the ugly caterpillar, never destined to be happy, and always to be in a dark place. I suppose he stayed in the marriage out of a sense of guilt towards his wife, but out of undying love to his twin boys. But inside, he was emotionally dying. He was physically dying. His wife died in the year 2000, a sad time. And I suppose in a way, David felt he could be free, but that wasn't going to happen. He knew what he wanted then, but he just couldn't move forwards with it. He'd spent his entire life validating his life as a male. He used to try and do macho roles that other men did. He was a part-time firefighter. He was a special constable. But they only lasted a couple of years because I suppose he didn't like the social side of those roles. He'd do the job, the firefighter, he enjoyed it, but he didn't like the social side, special constable. He didn't really get respect from the community he served because I think people, again, perceived him to be weak. It took another 14 years and a very grave moment in David's life when he went and sat on the edge of Beachy Head, a well-known UK beauty spot that is known for people going to take their lives. He sat on the edge of these cliffs just to really think about his life. And he was pulled back from the edge by two police officers, very compassionate, very understanding, took him to a place of safety, talked to him. And then when they were sure that he wasn't going to do anything, and I don't think he would have jumped, it was just a place to reflect on how life could have been for him. He went home and he finally understood that in order to be happy, he had to release Joanne from his body. So essentially, and I describe it like David lay down on the ground and it was as if somebody had undone a zip along the entire length of his body and out came Joanne. You see, David had to die in order to let Joanne live. And from that moment, I came out of the darkness. The ugly caterpillar was no longer there. I came into the light and the start of what was to be a long and quite incredible journey for me.
That is a beautiful reflection and description, Joanne. Thank you for sharing that with us. I wanted to ask you about some of the experience in that journey when you mentioned David's experience. At any stage, you mentioned a nervous breakdown earlier. Was any therapy offered over that period?
At one point, David was referred to a sexual psychiatrist in one of the big cities, Birmingham, and he went there, saw the psychiatrist, and he was basically told to go and read the magazines on the top shelf, the X-rated magazines, just to get him back on track. But of course, that was the last thing that David wanted to hear. And in a way, it compounded the feelings and the emotions that Joanne was flooding into him.
And now that you now have this story to tell, and as you transition now into this being part of your daily life in terms of advocacy and giving back, what are some of the steps that you are ensuring society takes to stop these experiences being similar to that, to address these issues at earlier stages and maybe lead to better awareness and inclusion of transgender?
Well, I suppose from the word go, I just wanted to raise awareness of the LGBT community. I told my sons about my transition. I was very positive about everything. I changed my name to Joanne after my mother, who died 39 years ago now. Her name was Anne Josephine, but nobody ever called her Anne. They used to call her Jo, short for Josephine. So it was natural for me to take the name Joanne. I told my father, who was still alive at that time, and he said, I will never call you Joanne. You'll always be my son. But I understand. And I think he probably knew that this was going to happen at some point. I became passionate, as I say, about raising awareness of certainly the LGBT community as a diverse group, as a marginalized group of people. I had gender surgery in 2017. Became legally female with a new birth certificate. And when I was recovering from that surgery at home, one of my sons came round to visit me just to see how I was. And totally out of the blue, he said, is it okay if I call you mum now? And I suppose there was floods of tears. It was incredibly emotional, but the true affirmation of who I'd become. And it was the same with all my friends. My social circle, they accepted me from the word go, and I remained positive, although it's not an easy journey. I didn't have support. I took the journey on my own with just the support of my GP, who put me on hormones and then obviously referred me to the gender clinic eventually. But I didn't want people to go through what I'd been through. And I suppose these days, diversity is far more widely accepted, particularly in the UK. Children learn about it at school. It's easier for them to come out at a young age. Whereas in my age at school, it just was unheard of.
Absolutely. And there are lots of issues I want to follow up on. Career, parenting, and also children of LGBTQ people have a coming out of their own to a degree. Can we start with the children, perhaps? You mentioned your sons. We talk a lot about the inclusion for LGBTQ parents, but is there an inclusion and perhaps a safe space we need to make for children of LGBTQ families who also have to come out in a sense when they discuss their family circumstance with others?
Well, of course, for anybody in the LGBT community, it's always a big step to take to accept who you are. And let's face it, whether you're lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender, you are born with it. You don't suddenly decide one day you wake up in the morning, oh, I'm going to be lesbian, I'm going to be transgender. You are born with it. And it gets to a point at some time in your life when you have to accept it. It's not a choice. And it's very difficult for members of the LGBT community to come out, particularly to family. It can result in alienization of the individual from family members, from partners, from spouse, from friends. It can result in domestic abuse, where they're just treated so badly because of the way they are. And that shouldn't be the case. And this is why allyship is so important and needs to be broadcast everywhere. Everybody needs to be an ally to a marginalized group of people. And we're not just talking about LGBT. Marginalized groups of people can be race, ethnicity, gypsy, Roma, traveler, LGBT, I suppose anything like that. And it is so important.
Absolutely. And clearly you have made this your life's work being an advocate, you've been recognized for it, and your work is prolific and featured on LinkedIn, which is wonderful to see. For other transgender individuals, it may not be their life's work. They may have transitioned perhaps early in their life as teens, and then they just want to enter the workforce like anybody else. I have read a statistic that many transgender people experience challenges when it comes to the workplace, both getting the job, getting past the interview, and then around inclusion. Do you have any insights into how we can improve that?
Well, I think certainly in the workplace, one of the key things that I always say is unconscious bias training has to be mandatory, particularly for those that are in the hiring role, whether it be an HR team, whether it be a senior director or a manager who does the hiring. They need to be aware of unconscious bias and the effects that it can have on the way that they hire. And unconscious bias, let's face it, is basically a fear of the unknown, but it's controllable. We've all got unconscious bias, but you can learn by understanding what it is, understanding what your fear is. And when you're hiring, this is very important, because very often when people hire, they look at whether somebody fits into their in-group or their out-group. If they don't have the same hobbies, if they don't belong to the same clubs, they immediately drop into the out-group. Whereas if they do have the same interests and hobbies, they're in the in-group and they stand a better chance of being hired. But people should employ on ability. Every organisation should employ on ability, not who you are. And that can be to anybody, LGBT, transgender, disability particularly, and race, ethnicity. Everybody deserves a chance, and you shouldn't hire on the look of somebody. You should hire specifically on their ability to do a job. Supporting transgender people in the workplace, it's very important to have allyship. It's very important to have some sort of support when they come out in the workplace. And as we're talking about transgender, even having simple things like gender neutral washroom facilities, which they can use without going into perhaps female facilities and having the worry of invading biological female spaces and vice versa. A transgender man wouldn't necessarily want to go into male facilities for the same reason. So it's really good to have these gender neutral facilities in place, have these support groups in place, and allyship. I've mentioned allyship before. Allyship in the workplace is crucial.
How about pronouns? I'd say for someone like yourself, it's going to be obvious to use the she, her pronoun. I suppose for other pronouns, and particularly a non-binary individual, that can sometimes be more challenging for people to start using them. How important is that?
I think I have mixed feelings over pronouns. I think it's very important for non-binary, where they use they, theirs, them. And actually, at a talk I gave this afternoon to 11, 12-year-olds at a local grammar school, at the question time at the end of it, a young person, 11-year-old, stood up and said, "My name's Alf, but I like to be called AJ, and I'm non-binary." And they stood up and stated that straight to all the year group that hadn't met for over 2 years because of COVID. And I was quite emotional, and I just applauded. And then everybody else in the room applauded. What an incredible thing to do. And yes, they are going to use those pronouns because they're non-binary. They've identified as non-binary. So pronouns are important. I personally don't use them. My name's Joanne. I look like a woman. I am a woman. I'm legally female. And if nobody gets that, that's their problem, not mine. But on social media, a lot of people do use pronouns. In a way, I suppose it identifies that that person is an ally to a diverse group. So if you use pronouns she, her, hers, it shows other people that you respect not only your identity, but you respect other people's identity as well, and they will then respect yours. So they have their uses, but non-binary is definitely a very good use for pronouns.
And let's go back to some personal reflections now. You've spoken a lot about allyship and how core that is. Did you have any allies and any key people who really supported you and made a difference in how your life evolved?
I suppose my biggest ally was probably my GP, who understood and was extremely helpful from the word go. I suppose I could also say my two boys and my friends that were always there to support me. And it is important for anybody going through the sort of journey that I've been through to have that trust and respect from people close to you.
And we spoke a little bit before just about some of the challenges after your transition. Were there ever any issues of security, personal security, that you experienced when you started to live your life as a woman? Or were there just other unexpected insights that you gained that way?
I suppose if I look back in the early stages of my transition, I had one or two looks from particularly men, because the changes were very slow. I never wore a wig. I just looked at what other women of my age wore, and I wore those things. I didn't put a miniskirt on, stiletto heels, ridiculous makeup, because that would have drawn attention to me, and I didn't want that. So by being conservative in my appearance, I was able to negotiate some of the problems that a lot of people have in the early stages of their transition. I did have one period of, it was absolute hate on social media. And that was following a Labour Party conference, which was held in Brighton in the UK, and a women's place meeting. It was linked with the Labour Party conference. And there were a lot of trans activists demonstrating outside. And I was actually in Liverpool at the time when this was on. And I got back home and had a friend request or follow request from somebody on Twitter that I'd never heard of. And I'm always really cautious about who I allow to follow me. And I looked this individual up and I saw a link to this women's place meeting with some vile comments made about me personally, saying something like, what was this woman in inverted commas doing in Liverpool when all this was going on in Brighton? And the comments that were made on that tweet that she put on were vile, absolutely vile. And some of the things that were said, I couldn't repeat. Some of the things like, why is this man going to talk to schoolgirls? It was terrible. It was reported to the police, but no action was taken because they couldn't identify an individual perpetrator of the offence. But it nearly stopped me from doing the work that I do now. It absolutely devastated me. And I did have another incident where I was supporting a transgender friend who lives in a neighbouring county. She'd gone to a pub to have a drink and she was stopped by the landlady from using the female facilities. And there weren't any gender neutral facilities, but she didn't feel safe using the male facilities, obviously, because she'd have probably been beaten up. I got involved and I said, look, you really need to let this person be who they want to be. And it's actually illegal for you to stop them using the female facilities, which it is in the UK. And about a week later, I received death threats. And that was reported again to the police and they did trace where the threats were coming from. I was frightened to leave my home. I didn't know whether they knew where I lived. but it turned out to be this landlady in this pub in the neighbouring county. And it resulted in a caution, but it's certainly something that I wouldn't want to go through again. And to be fair, I haven't. And I think I've become so highly respected now. I'm Equality, Inclusion and Diversity Advisor for a heritage railway where they run steam trains, steam locomotives fairly close to me. And a lot of the volunteers there are elderly and they didn't understand. And I used to get misgendered by them. And I'd just say, look, it's not he, it's not him or whatever. I'm Joanne. I'm she. I'm her. And I told them why. And they understood. And this is the whole thing, the whole point about it. If people understand, you do get that respect. I did a television interview with local television news here in the south of England. It was broadcast a couple of weeks ago, and I was having a cup of coffee in a local cafe, and there were a couple sitting on the table next to me, and they kept looking at me. And I'm thinking, this is a bit strange. Why they keep looking at me? And then out of the blue, husband says, you were on television the other day, weren't you? What an incredible woman you are. Your interview with them, which was basically about my life and everything, it was incredible. And you're amazing. But this is what it is. My whole focus, I suppose, if I can educate just one person every day, then I'm making a difference.
And I think that's the mantra for all diversity and inclusion challenges, is it is about person to person. That's how we break down the bias. And we talked about this recently in a different podcast around vaccine hesitancy. If you hear from one person why the vaccine made sense for them, you may be more likely to overcome the groupthink, I suppose. That's a beautiful story. The other piece of advice on a podcast recently was never read the comments, which sadly, for most women on social media, has to be a way of behaving, because unfortunately, there is more unhinged and vile behavior online on social media than would ever be, I think, in person. So it's unfortunately...
A minefield. I was asked to talk about something that did happen in America recently. Leah Thomas,
the
college student,
the
transgender athlete, and... the comments that were made that there is absolutely no way she should have been competing in a female swimming event because she was male. But when you talk about these things, you have to be very careful, because they interviewed somebody else from the UK, a well-known UK athlete first, who was basically focused on gender equality, the right for biological females to have their own events, their own space. My argument was that Leah Thomas on HRT, had she had surgery or not, did she still have male anatomy? And of course, that's then influenced with the levels of testosterone, the hormone. If she hasn't had surgery, her levels are going to be high. If, like me, she has had surgery, my muscle mass has gone down by about 30%. And to say that she shouldn't be allowed to race in a female-only event, I found a little bit difficult to understand. But in the context of the whole scenario, maybe for somebody that hasn't had surgery, whether it be female to male or male to female, there should be a separate event that's inclusive to anybody. So it can be men, women, transgender, whatever. They have their own separate event. But for somebody like me that is legally female, I have a right to use women's spaces and do the things and enter things that other women would do. There's absolutely no question of that. And my birth certificate has been changed because I had something called a gender recognition certificate. So the sex on my birth certificate is now girl. But that sort of thing is going to be very controversial for many years to come. And I appreciate in the United States, where you are, a lot of the states are very conservative, they're very religious, and there is a considerable amount of hate towards the transgender community. And it's unnecessary. It's all well and good the US Senate making certain laws about LGBT, about transgender. We have the incident with transgender people being allowed to serve in the forces, which was overturned. But it then falls down to the individual states to make their own laws, and they'll make whatever laws they want. And it's a great shame that in a modern society, in the 21st century, that not everybody is treated with the dignity and respect that everybody deserves as a basic human right.
Well, thank you for reminding us of the nuance and complexity of those situations. I think you've introduced a nice perspective into what is often a very blunt, kind of black and white argument. My last question is around any creed or motto that you live by, or maybe any advice that you would have liked your younger self to know.
I use three words. Every presentation I give, I use three words. And those three words are believe, to achieve. Believe in your ability and your destiny in order to achieve success and happiness. And I'll tell that to anybody. I told it to the students this afternoon, because when they're going through the education process, if they can just remember those three words, their lives will be fulfilled.
Very appropriate that you come from the Believe Foundation, which is a really core to your strength there.
But yeah, that wasn't actually the reason for it. But it's because the words rhyme as well.
I love that. I just wanted to thank you, Joanne. This has been a tremendously moving story. And I am so delighted that we have your presence in the industry. You are a tower of strength, of grace, and a tremendous ally yourself. And your voice, the fact that you're not afraid to use it, that you're using it every day with the young community, with every community, with people in the workforce, it is raising awareness and advocacy. And that is so key. And I'm so thrilled to feature you on the 2022 Pride Series podcast. Thank you for coming here.
I thank you very much for inviting me. It's been my absolute pleasure. And I will always speak up for the rights of the LGBT and diverse communities that live in modern society.
I'm Ethan Devitt. Thank you for listening to the 50 Faces podcast. If you liked what you heard and would like to tune in to hear more inspiring people and their personal journeys, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, and all views are personal and should not be attributed to the organizations and affiliations of the host or any guest. 'Cause I was made to be free.